The headlines: Russia and China veto a U.S. push at the U.N. Security Council to toughen sanctions against North Korea over its missile launches. Iraq's parliament approves a law that bans and criminalizes any attempts to normalize relations with Israel. And U.S. police account of the recent deadly shooting in a school in the state of Texas comes under scrutiny amid growing anger over the tragedy. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The United States has failed in its push for tougher U.S. sanctions, U.N. sanctions, that is, on North Korea after Russia and China vetoed a vote on the measures.
We have often stated that the introduction of new sanctions against the DPRK is a path to a dead end. We have stressed the ineffectiveness and the inhumanity of further strengthening the sanctions pressure on Pyongyang starting in 2006, since many restrictive resolutions were adopted against Pyongyang.
The situation on the peninsula has developed to what it is today, thanks primarily to the flip-flop of U.S. policies and failure to uphold the results of previous dialogues.
The Chinese envoy added that sanctions will have humanitarian consequences for North Korea. The U.S. drafted resolutions that called for the cut in oil imports by North Korea over its recent firing of an intercontinental ballistic missile. Pyongyang has already faced several rounds of U.N. sanctions over its missile and nuclear program over the past years. North Korea says its program is aimed at self-defense in the face of regional threats led by the U.S. The North also says that the U.S. has failed to fulfill its promise to lift sanctions after their leaders had summits in 2018 and 19 to resolve the dispute. Andrew Leung, an independent China specialist, earlier joined us with his take on the growing tensions between the U.S. and North Korea.
Well, of course, the United States, as the world hegemon, wants to double down on its most powerful long-armed kind of coercion tactic, using the American dollar and the American military and other influences to enforce these sanctions on countries deemed hostile to the United States. Of course, the North Korea is not about to mount an attack on the United States. Basically, North Korea is fed up and has lost confidence in the so-called negotiations, which have lasted for decades without any results. Every time the United States wants to have their cake and eat it, all the time. So this is not no wonder. But as for the reactions of China and Russia, I think that this is also an important moment in changing dynamics in the world.
Newly inaugurated South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has held a summit with U.S. President Joe Biden on May 21st, with the South Korean president standing at attention for American anthem and holding his hand over his heart. Yoon campaigned on a pledge to move South Korea closer to the U.S. and strengthen the alliance, but the photo with his hand over his heart was too much for many South Koreans. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol promised to move the country closer to the United States, expanding trade and strengthening the military alliance. When Yoon recently hosted a summit with U.S. President Joe Biden, he went so far as to place his hand over his heart during the American national anthem, drawing condemnation from many South Koreans, including activists critical of U.S.-South Korea ties.
I believe it destroyed Koreans' pride. How can the president of one country do such a thing? I think Yoon Suk-yeol is a pro-American toady, and this act showed his unfiltered political inclinations.
Koo San-ha and her group demonstrated against the U.S.-South Korea alliance during Biden's visit.
The essence of the South Korea-U.S. alliance is to subordinate South Korea and give up South Korean interests to protect American hegemony and American interest.
In contrast, outside the U.S. embassy, one-man demonstrator Han Ga-ki says he has received a lot of support over his two-year-long vigil in favor of strong U.S.-South Korea ties.
South Korea, the United States, and Japan have come together to protect and defend liberal democracy. So the South Korea-U.S. alliance is essential. It's a matter of freedom being taken away or keeping your freedom.
South Korea is anything but a free rider when it comes to its alliance relationship with the United States. Seoul pays about $1 billion per year toward the cost of hosting 28,500 U.S. troops here. South Korea also spends billions of dollars on American weapons. In the wake of North Korea's recent missile tests, Yoon wants to see American strategic assets, nuclear-capable bombers and ships, conduct military drills in South Korea. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The Iraqi parliament has unanimously approved legislation that criminalizes any forms of normalizing ties with Israel. The legislative body says the law represents a true reflection of the Iraqi people's will. It urged the Arab and Islamic parliaments to follow suit. The bill requires all Iraqi officials, including those in the semi-autonomous Kurdistan region, as well as institutions and media, to refrain from establishing relations with Israel. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has hailed the move as a historic decision to counter the trend of normalization by some Arab countries. The United Arab Emirates, Sudan, Bahrain, and Morocco established diplomatic ties with Israel in 2020 under U.S. brokered deals. Palestinians see the normalization as a stab in their back. Political commentator Firas al-Najim says the Iraqi parliament's legislation to ban the normalization of ties with Israel is a turning point, which can inspire other countries to follow the same approach.
Is a little bit different than the way it was going a few months ago, where regimes were jumping on board to normalize and become closer to the Zionist occupiers of Palestine. This is a very, new ignition, and it's a new change in the Middle East, and I think this will open the doors for other governments in the region. I've already heard recently that Algeria is also very much inspired now and willing to do the same thing inside Algeria, and they're speaking about it. So you have people that are going towards supporting Israel, and there's ones that are going now towards supporting Palestine. So this major development is actually a very good change, and it actually also speaks for the nations. I mean, the nation's will and the determination of the nation has a big role in this.
The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says the world should unite against unilateral policies of the United States. Ali Shamkhani was speaking with his Russian counterpart in Tajikistan on the sidelines of the fourth regional security dialogue. He said some Western countries are misusing the Ukraine crisis to pursue their expansionist policies in the region. The top Iranian security official also referred to Western sanctions on Russia, saying the bans will remain in place even after the Ukraine war is over. That, in his words, highlights the need for more cooperation between sanctioned countries. Shamkhani said certain countries impose sanctions on independent nations to impose their political will. He added that Iran has faced sanctions over the past 43 years and now has turned into a model that those measures are ineffective. Nikolai Pachurev, also for his part, said that anti-Russia sanctions have highlighted the fact that establishing an all-inclusive cooperation with the West is not in Russia's national interest. Hundreds of Iranian families have taken to Tehran's Azadi Stadium to take part in a choir in support of the Islamic establishment, Yusuf Jalali reports.
Hello, Commander. It's the title of a new epic song themed with support for the Islamic Revolution and its leader from the mouth of Iranian children. The pop choir has recently been chanted in every corner in Iran, from TV shows to schools and public places. On Thursday, some 100,000 people jam-packed Tehran's Azadi Stadium to sing along Salam Farmande, Persian for Hello Commander.
Although we have not seen the Islamic Revolution, but we, as the new generation, will hold on to the ideals of the revolution and our leader. This is the theme of this song.
Hello Commander is about our Imam Mahdi. In the song, we urge Imam Mahdi's hasty arrival to save humankind from cruelty.
The song addresses Imam Mahdi, the 12th Shia Imam, and the prophesied apocalyptic savior in Shia Islam, who is believed to be currently living in occultation.
I brought my children to this gathering because they love Imam Mahdi. Here, they learn to be the soldiers of Imam Mahdi.
I came to show my love for Imam Mahdi. In the song, we assure our leader that we will be loyal to Imam Mahdi.
In a part of the song, children promise Imam Mahdi that they will tread on the path of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps' Quds Force commander, who was assassinated by the United States in Iraq in 2020.
In this song, we as the new generation vow to be the next Qasem Soleimani. We are proud of him because he brought us security. I wish he was here today.
The song was first broadcast from Iran's national television on March 20th this year, after leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, delivered a televised Persian New Year speech. Since then, the song has been performed in schools and national public occasions as a show of support for the Islamic Republic.
Hello Commander educates the new generation on the ambitions of the Islamic Revolution and encourages them to be loyal guardians to protect those ideals, something which is seen as a step toward promoting the revolution among the new generation. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
U.S. police are under scrutiny for their late response to a school shooting that killed 19 elementary students and two adults in the state of Texas on Tuesday. A video circulating online shows families of the students urging officers to take action while standing outside the school. Local media say police waited outside for at least 40 minutes before confronting the gunman. The shooting took place in the city of Uvalde. Earlier, authorities held a press briefing praising police for their quick response to the massacre. Families of the victims dismissed that. Meanwhile, activists have gathered outside the U.S. Capitol calling for action to control gun violence.
I'm here because I'm scared it's going to be me next. I don't know who's next. Me, my friends, my peers, and nothing's being changed. I'm a 17-year-old girl in high school, and something needs to be changed, and there needs to be laws in place.
I'm a grandma. I'm against guns. That's all. Gag. It makes me gag every time this happens, and it happens all the time.
Always.
Two times in the last 12 days.
It's our second go-round.
How much more can we put up with this stuff?
The activists called for more restrictions on people legally acquiring guns. Some also proposed prohibiting gun purchases by people under 21. They argued that such a rule could have prevented the 18-year-old shooter in Texas from acquiring weapons. The U.S. has seen several mass shootings this month. Almost 2 weeks ago, a gunman opened fire at a grocery store in Buffalo, New York. 10 people were killed and 3 wounded. 11 of the victims were African Americans.
The U.S. has been shocked by another deadly shooting incident. A gunman has shot dead 19 young children and 2 adults at an elementary school in the U.S. state of Texas. The carnage happened at a school in the city of Uvalde. The gunman has been identified by law enforcement as 18-year-old Salvador Ramos. The teenager is suspected of shooting his grandmother before the rampage. A U.S. Border Patrol official who was nearby when the shooting began rushed into the school and shot and killed the gunman. The shooter was wearing body armor as he carried out the attack.
I was just devastated. It's heart-rending for us as grandparents. We have children in the age vicinity that happened here. It's overwhelming.
In a speech from the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden said he was sick and tired of responding to mass shootings as he called for gun control. This is the deadliest U.S. school shooting since the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut, in which 20 children and 6 staff were killed.
Why are you here? If not to solve a problem as existential as this. This isn't inevitable. These kids weren't unlucky. This only happens in this country and nowhere else. Nowhere else do little kids go to school thinking that they might be shot that day.
The bloodshed has revived calls for gun control measures in the U.S. School shootings have become recurring emergencies in the U.S. There have already been 27 school shootings this year alone. 26 school shootings were recorded last year. The massacre at Robb Elementary School happened only 10 days since several people were killed in a racially motivated mass shooting in New York.
So to me, it's really two factors. It's troubled kids, troubled young people, and guns. And every country has troubled young people to some extent, but not every country has a system where you can get guns so easily.
Russian forces have come closer to surrounding Ukrainian troops in 2 eastern cities as they try to expand their control over the Donbas region. Russians have been attacking from 3 sides to encircle the Ukrainians in the cities of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk. That, according to Ukrainian officials, they say Russian forces reached the last highway out of the cities and even set up a checkpoint, but that was later broken. The officials say the Russian army does not control the route now, but they are shelling it. If those 2 cities fall, Russia would gain control of over the Donbas province of Luhansk. Over the past few weeks, Russia has focused its fighting in the industrial eastern Donbas region, where Moscow-backed pro-independence fighters are stationed. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia is pursuing a policy of genocide in Donbas. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible?
The راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, we are currently explaining Surah Ar-Rahman, which is considered the crown of the Noble Quran, since it opens with the word Ar-Rahman, or the All-Beneficent, thus proclaiming one of the most beautiful attributes of the Almighty Creator. This Surah highlights the All-Merciful Lord's wonders of creation, describes the end of the material world, and paints an evocative picture of the delights of paradise. Hell is briefly contrasted in Ayah 43 with the joys that await the righteous. The refrain, فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ, which means, so which of your Lord's bounties will you both mankind and jinn deny, runs throughout the surah. We continue from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 46, 47 of the said surah.
وَلِمَنْ خَافَ مَقَامَ رَبِّهِ جَنَّتَانِ فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ.
And for him who stands in awe of his Lord will be two gardens. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we referred to the horrendous events that will occur at the end of the world when celestial bodies and galaxies will veer from their orbits, turning into a flood of molten substances beyond our imagination, before emergence of a new order of existence. We also said that on the Day of Judgment, the faces of the guilty will reflect their deeds. Those who had committed abominable sins and disobeyed divine commandments will be cast into hellfire, since they died in the state of atheism, polytheism, and all sorts of disbelief, or were habitual sinners who never bothered to repent of their evil deeds, despite the long respite given by the all-merciful Lord. The ayahs that we recited to you now mean to say that, in contrast to the terrible fate of the people of hell, the righteous persons who were always cognizant of God Almighty and beyond His commandments will be immune from the horrors of that day, and will be rewarded for their correct beliefs. As Ayah 46 means to say, there will be two gardens or more in paradise for any believer who was in awe of the exalted Creator, since such a state prevents a person from committing sins. A hadith in this regard from the Prophet 16 Fallible Heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, means to say, "The one who believes that God is all-seeing and all-hearing will be in awe of standing before God and thus will not commit evil deeds." From these ayahs we'll learn that, number one, God is all-merciful and His glory inspires awe. But this does not mean He is the source of fear for His creature. Number two, the proper cognizance of the Almighty Creator and adherence to the path of the Prophet and the Imams make the faithful to be always wary of their deeds and fear disobeying Him. Number three, God should not be worshipped for the desire of paradise or the fear of hell, but should be worshipped out of gratitude as the only one deserving of worship. And number four, rewards for the people of paradise are beyond imagination. And the reference to the awarding of two gardens with all their bounties for a righteous person is an indication in this regard. Let us now listen to ayahs 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, and 53 of Surah Ar-Rahman.
ذواتا أفنان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان فيهما عينان تجريان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان فيهما من كل فاكهة زوجان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان.
Both the gardens abounding in branches of a variety of fresh fruits, So, which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? In both of them will be two flowing springs. So, which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? In both of them will be two kinds of every fruit. So, which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? These ayahs speak about the infinite bounties of paradise, where a variety of fruits are available on branches of the two gardens granted to a believer. And unlike the trees in this world, these branches are perennially fresh with fruits always available and not seasonal as part of divine blessings in paradise. These gardens will always have two springs of fresh flowing water to provide a pleasant atmosphere of unending bliss for the faithful to enjoy these favors and give thanks to the all-merciful Lord. In both the gardens, every fruit will be of two kinds, perhaps a variety that was available in this world and another which is special to paradise with more delicious taste. These ayahs are interspersed with the rhetorical question, so which of your Lord's bounties will you both, mankind and jinn, deny? From these ayahs we learn that, number one, in the gardens of paradise, there is an infinite variety of fresh fruits and shady trees of verdant branches beyond human imagination. Number two, the gardens have two fresh flowing springs and two kinds of each and every fruit, delightful to the eye and delicious in taste. And number three, the people of paradise will never be tired or bored of the bounties granted by God Almighty. Now let us listen to ayahs 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, and 59 of the same surah.
متكئين على فرش بطائنها من استبرق وجنى الجنتين دان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان فيهن قاصرات الطرف لم يطمثهن إنس قبلهم ولا جان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان كأنهن الياقوت والمرجان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان.
They will be reclining on beds lined with green silk, and the fruit of the two gardens will be near at hand. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? In them are maidens of restrained glances, whom no human or jinn has touched before. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? As if they were rubies and corals. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? These ayahs refer to the other blessings of paradise, where the virtuous will recline in peace and perfect serenity upon couches of indescribable tapestry and lined with brocade, more precious than any worldly fabric, while the ripe fruits of the two gardens will always be available at hand without the need to take the trouble of going after them. The carpets will be of the finest material with the most exquisite lining. Among the rewards for the people of paradise are chaste, very beautiful, and spotlessly clean spouses whom no human or jinn has ever touched, and whose glances are solely for their husbands. It is indeed one of the best merits of a wife to think only of her husband and to love only him. It is proof of the fact that paradise is not the place of illicit relations. When Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, was asked whether a pious pair of husband and wife will remain united in paradise, he replied, "If the quality of piety and faith of husband is better, he will have the option. And if the quality of the piety and faith of the wife is better, she will have the option. If one desires the other, they will certainly live together." Ayah 58 further depicts the beauty of the spouses in paradise, comparing them to rubies in terms of rosiness and coral, in terms of whiteness, since the intermingling of these two colors, namely red and white, presents a very beauteous complexion. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, anyone who avoids forbidden pleasures in this world, God will provide him or her with the unending legitimate pleasures in paradise. Number two, chastity and loyalty are the characteristics of virtuous women, and the believing women who made their homes paradise for their husband and children will indeed be granted the eternal bliss of heavenly paradise. And number three, those who enter paradise, whether man or woman, will glow with astounding beauty, even if they were not attractive in the mortal world. In conclusion of this week's episode, we present to you ayahs 60 and 61 of Surah Ar-Rahman.
هل جزاء الإحسان إلا الإحسان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان.
Is the requital of goodness anything but goodness? So, which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? Here, although the general principle is mentioned that goodness by anyone should be returned with goodness, the divine promise is that those who obeyed Lord Most High and strove to do good for His sake will definitely be granted unimaginable rewards in paradise. Thus, how can the human beings or the jinn deny the bounties of God Almighty? These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, God commands us to compensate goodness with goodness. And number two, the All-Merciful will grant unimaginable rewards in paradise to the believers.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
When it comes to the Ukraine conflict, there have been some major gains made by the Russian army, unlike what is being reported by the Western media. For example, the port city of Mariupol is now under full Russian control. This is while the Ukrainian Prime Minister Zelensky has said only diplomacy can end the war, unlike its partners like the U.S., who just got the green light for another $40 billion in military aid. Meanwhile, the world is suffering from food shortages and record inflation. Well, these are just some of the angles we'll be covering in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Political analyst and blogger at The Polemicist, Jim Kavanaugh, joins us from New York. Also joining us is political analyst Rusia Segodnya from Rustam Safronov, who joins us from Moscow.
Is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to you both. Let me first start with you, Jim Kavanaugh, taking a look at the military advancements that has been made by Russia. Basically, the siege of the Azovstal is over, and it is reported that Russia is in full control of Mariupol. First of all, why is that deemed to be Russia's biggest victory yet, as it has been described?
Mariupol was the strongest redoubt of the Azov battalion, who were the most dedicated and vicious fighters on behalf of the Kiev government. And there was an enormous number of fighters that were taken prisoner. I think it was almost 2,500 came out over the past few days and surrendered unconditionally to the Donbas and Russian troops. And that was a surrender, not an evacuation, as the American press presented it. So it demonstrates that, you know, it took a long time. It took longer than maybe that the Russians wanted or thought it would, but the Russians worked methodically for that victory, and it's a big victory, and it's going.
Okay, it seems like we may have lost our guest there. Rostam, let me ask you about how this gives Russia the advantage that it was looking for, and not only that, looking at the way that this at this point may then lead Russia to move into the Donbas region as a whole. I'm guessing that is the next military maneuver or strategy that Russia has. And if so, if it does take over Donbas, does that give an indication that perhaps the war is going to be over? I mean, is that Russia's military objective in this war?
Well, I think it's a minimum what Russia wants to get. That's liberation of Donbas from Ukrainian control and giving how Russia would present that the people of Donbass right to decide their destiny. Do they want to be independent or to be with Russia? But certainly not under Kiev control. Would Russia go further and continue advancing to another areas of Ukraine, trying to occupy, for example, entire coast of the Black Sea? That's remain to be seen. The question is the position of Kiev government. They do not want to give up. They do not recognize Russian rights to control the destiny of Donbas, and even don't want to give up in Crimea. All of that making truce in next future impossible. What Mariupol meant, that's a big chunk of military force what Ukraine has, finally was substantially tarnished, diminished. because that so-called die-hard, almost like Ukrainian SS fighters, which used to not supposed to surrender and whatever, they used to be glorified, very dedicated, very much brainwashed with a semi-nationalistic, almost Nazi propaganda. Finally, they have to give up, and it's giving Russia some moral advantage. Okay. I mean, military too, because defense of Azovstal plant was a huge military event and siege of that, and it was distract a lot of Russian forces from advancing to entire area of Donbass. They used to be paralyzed there because, you know, tied up, tangled up. So now it's over, and it will help to liberate some forces for further advances. So that's how I'm seeing the situation.
So that's one way of looking at it, Jim Kavanaugh. But the other way that mainly Western media is depicting this, and we're trying to just get to the bottom of what's going on militarily, is that this war has been, or special military operation has been a failure when it comes to Russia. We know, and I'm sure you're familiar with how it's been described as what was supposed to be a lightning conquest, as it's been written, but yet it's been somewhat drawn out, and Russia has been unable to take the capital, Kyiv, seen as a failure and a pullback of forces. But based on what we're seeing today, I mean, that's not a military failure on the part of Russia. Are the online, whether online or any other description of Russia failing military, just meant to hamper and disappoint the Russian morale, so to speak?
Well, it's meant to gin up support in the West and in the United States for a fight that they believe they can win. We have, I think it's the case, and I don't think, you know, I don't want to pretend not to recognize that the things didn't go as quickly as Russia probably thought they would, and that many people who were supporters of the Russian cause here thought it would. But I think that, you know, when you look at the real deep military situation, the Russians are achieving their objectives. And the primary objective wasn't to, the defeat of an enemy doesn't happen because you take cities, it happens because you destroy their military. And this is what the Russians have been methodically doing, destroying the Ukrainian military apparatus from its logistics and its ability to resupply and its communications possibilities, etc. And the Russians really want to secure the Donbass republics. They want to secure the coast, and they have been largely successful on that. So the thing that's been happening in the United States and in the West is, you know, tactical retreats, changes of position, movements of have been portrayed as Russia's losing, and that has encouraged a lot of people to say, we have to fight, and American politicians, we can fight this to win it, and not only to help Ukraine, but to weaken Russia. I think that's a fantasy and a very dangerous one that is getting us into a very close to a third world war.
All right, now comes one of the key questions that I'm hoping that you can answer, Rustam, and that is how it has been reported that the Azov fighters, of which it has been described to be far right, and perhaps you could expand on that more for us, is said to have had an impact or an effect in this conflict. Please tell us about the Azov fighters, who they are, what does their capture mean, how many numbers there are, and whether one of the main reasons that Putin went into the special military operation was, as he said, to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. This has been talked about, but now that they have been captured, many of them, tell us what it means in terms of the war.
Well, it used to be a few thousands of fighters of Azov, very elite and very well trained and equipped, not even a detachment, it's almost brigade. So because it was increasing and recruiting new members, and it was very prestigious to serve in that detachment. That were highly motivated military men, volunteers, soldiers, convinced nationalists. A lot of them right now, when they used to be searched during the surrender, have in their body tattoo of the Hitler swastika, pictures of Stepan Bandera. One of these individuals think with the name of David Kasatkin or something like that. He had a sign additionally to everything else, to different kind of slogans and words and swastika. He had also signed, kill all of them. So it's like a soldier who was looking at him saying, like, who do you really want to kill? Like, who all, like, whatever, entire people in the face of the earth. So that was very motivated people. And generally speaking, in Ukrainian military forces after 2014, when Russia took over Crimea, new Ukrainian authorities put a lot of emphasis into the nationalistic spirit of Ukrainian army. First of all, they moved from the east all military schools to Lvov, to that area, to Ternopil, Ivano-Frankivsk, to the west. And they inserted special political commissars from the western part of Ukraine, which is traditionally much more nationalistic, into military structure to be able to discipline and boost morale in nationalistic way. So Azov was a core of all of that. That's why Azov was defending biggest city in the area of Donbass, which rebellion republics wasn't able to conquer. So that's why the failure of Azov meant so much. I told you before, it's almost like SS used to be in Nazi Germany.
Right. Azov. Well, that's how it's been described. And Jim Kavanaugh, Ukraine is the world's only nation to actually have this neo-Nazi formation within its military ranks. And again, as our guest there talked about them, they are very capable to earn that. And that is perhaps why the Russian President Vladimir Putin has said that they are the ones that are being targeted. But again, the picture that's being painted is not as such when you listen to Western media, that Putin's just out of his mind to even mention this. And that's just some kind of, I don't know, illusion or delusion that the Russian president has. What are your thoughts on the fact that now the arrest of and the death of some of these Azov fighters is a factor in this war?
Well, it is a factor. It's always been a factor. And but your point is valid. I don't know to the extent to which the West and Western media is willing to recognize this. I mean, the Azov Battalion is one of a number of really fascistic battalions, and these are groups, that political groups, that whose legacy goes back to fighting with Hitler in the Second World War, and they're not ashamed of it. They're proud of it, and they boast about it, and they call themselves Nazis. So, and you do have a relationship between, you know, the fascist groups around the world, especially in Europe, look to them, because as you say, this is the only nation in the world where these groups are highly integrated into the state apparatus and the military apparatus. And they've changed the ideological framework and climate of the country since 2014. So, you know, you have groups around the world that look to them for inspiration. The Buffalo shooter in New York, last week in New York, took his inspiration from the Christchurch, New Zealand shooter, who took his inspiration from the Azov Battalion, whom he visited in Ukraine. And you have the fact that if these groups win, that's going to be an impetus, and it's going to be an inspiration to fascist groups around the world. And if they lose, that's going to be a defeat for them. So this is part of what's going on here, and it's an important part.
Yeah, and that's not a narrative that you're going to hear. What you just said is not something you're going to hear specifically in Western media. Okay, let's take a look at another development here, Rustam, and that is the fact that you're looking at Finland and Sweden and the membership to NATO. Now, the question I have is not just these two countries, but the way that they are going about becoming a member, the incentive behind it. Do you think that there is some kind of scaremongering tactics that perhaps the U.S. is using for countries, European countries, like these two, that say, listen, if you don't join NATO, you could be next, something to that effect, in order not only to get weapon sales, but also obviously to have membership dues, because obviously we know they have to pay that to the NATO organization.
Well, you're right about that, absolutely. In one point, when president was Mr. Donald Trump, he used to argue all the time, Europe and this rich nation of Europe do not contribute enough in all this defense apparatus, security issues in Europe. They do not pay enough. Why only Americans have to carry that way, this weight? And all these leads would be useful for United States. But I wouldn't deny natural fear of that nations in general atmosphere, because we have to admit majority of so-called civilized world, Western world, they portray that action of Russia as an aggression, and conversations like narrative, oh, you're the next, it's very much spread around the people who want to be scared. I mean, like, for example, some nationalists in Central Asia saying, oh, Kazakhstan going to be the next, you know, let's, like, whatever, move further away from Russia. Like in European nations saying, oh, next thing, like Putin will take over Baltic republics. Of course, all of that seems to me as a very big exaggeration, and Russia doesn't have energy or drive for that. With Ukraine, it was a different story. It was a combination of two factors. Yes, Russia, Kremlin are considering armament of Ukraine and attempt to join the NATO as an existential threat. But it was especially painful and dangerous because, yes, Mr. Putin and a lot of people in Russia thinking, we grow up from the one root, these three nations, Russians, Belarusians, and Ukrainians. They're almost the same. They're almost one people, not exactly, but almost. So, and for them especially, they drive to the West. That's especially upsetting, treacherous thing, which has to be prevented by any cost. That's what contribute into that special military operation, mm-hmm. As a rationale, as a... Well, Finland and Sweden, Putin said, like, we don't really care about so much. I mean, it's bad, but we don't have anything against these nations, and we're not, like... Yes, we do. We will create necessary step, move troops, whatever, create different bases in the border, but it's not where we're seeing dangers from. You could see, like, Ukraine with Azov, the very powerful nationalistic rhetoric, with a suppressing Russian-speaking population in Donbass seems being much more dangerous to Kremlin. That's okay. Why it's a different story.
All right. So here we have Zelensky. Aside from the fact that it watches as countries join NATO within a span of a very short period of time, and aside from the fact that the EU is not prepared to have membership for it, it says, Zelensky is saying, a diplomatic solution is still possible. Diplomacy is the only way to end the war. Well, that's fine and dandy, but then you have the U.S. got another $40 billion just approved, and you still have the push for a military solution to come not only from the U.S., but obviously it leading the pack of NATO countries, NATO member countries. What is the story there? Do you think Zelensky, Jim Kavanaugh, wants some kind of negotiations now? Or is he just saying that, and he has to follow whoever is ordering him?
I think that Zelensky is not in control of the situation, and I think that you'd have to be silly to not think that he's every day on the phone and zooming call with his handlers in Washington and the CIA and American embassy, and he's under pressure from the right-wing fascists in Ukraine who do not want to settle this with Russia. Look. There was a diplomatic situation. This is the whole point. There was a diplomatic situation that was arrived at 8 years ago. And he was elected as president a couple of years ago to implement it, and he couldn't do it. And the United States doesn't want the war to stop, and the right-wing fascists don't want a war to stop. And his own senior advisor is on the record. You can see it on the internet saying a war with Russia is the only way.